Hi, and welcome back to the Press Rewind Prince Lyrics Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Brenninger. Joining me today to talk about the song When You Were Mine for episode 20 is Jerry Bonner. Jerry previously joined me for episode 11 on the song Why You Wanna Treat Me So Bad. So I want to welcome Jerry back to the program.
Good morning, Jerry.
Good morning, Jason. Thanks for having me once again.
Yes, you're welcome. You're welcome. So we're here to talk about When You Were Mine, which is the second song off of Dirty Mind on the track listing. And it was never released as a single in the United States, but it was a B-side to Controversy. Plus, it was featured on the Hits and B-Sides collection from the 90s. So even though it wasn't officially a single, it has a lot of popularity among the Prince community, I feel like. A lot of people know this song, which isn't, you can't necessarily say that about a lot of Prince's non-singles from the early 80s.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, from what I guess that, you know, the information that, you know, that I have gathered or looked at and read about is this is one of Prince's most covered songs, which I found kind of hard to believe over his vast catalog. And you know, I think a lot of people, especially who grew up like we did in the 80s, their first exposure to this song wasn't on Dirty Mind. It was probably Cyndi Lauper's cover.
Yeah.
That's legitimately where I first heard it and didn't know it was a Prince song until I actually bought Dirty Mind years later, like in the late 80s, early 90s. And then I was like, well, I know this song. And, you know, so that's where it my first access to it was with, believe it or not, you know, Cyndi Lauper. So
yeah, the Cyndi Lauper version off of She's So Unusual, I mean, that was a huge album for her, obviously. So
yeah.
A lot of people's first glimpse of this song came off of that. And, you know, she played it, I believe, played it live like on the American Music Awards or something like that. And
right,
so
1985. Yeah,
yeah. Apparently. So there was some exposure there. And then Mitch Ryder did a version of it as well and had like a music video for it that was on MTV. Now, I might have seen or heard of that version once. It wasn't like a big crossover hit or anything. But, you know, like you said, it's a very frequently covered song of his. And I think kind of like along with I Feel For You, it's one of those songs that, you know, other people made it more famous. And some don't even know or never knew that it was a Prince song until, you know, the internet or until it started getting, you know, words started leaking out about it. Otherwise, people wouldn't have known.
Exactly. Yeah. I Feel For You was the same kind of thing. I didn't realize it was a Prince song until years later. It was, yeah, the Mitch Ryder version I didn't know existed, and again, until the other day when I started doing a little bit of research. And it's strange that both songs were covered. Like, I think Cyndi Lauper's version was 83, and so was the Mitch Ryder one. So it's odd that two, at least to me, that, you know, the two different, very, very different acts covered the same song in the same year. And a song that really wasn't all that old at that point. I mean, it was, what, 2 or 3 years old at that point, mm-hmm. You know. It's funny you mentioned about the covers, too, because I was, this is just complete, you know, one of those kind of weird life serendipity type things. I was in a record store on Friday with my daughter, and they were playing a cover version of When You Were Mine, but it was like a almost like countrified version of it. And I meant to ask the guy at the store who was by, but I forgot because I was with my daughter and she was, you know, asking me questions about things and it slipped my mind. And then as I was driving home, I was like, oh, I forgot to ask like who was doing this cover version of When You Were Mine.
I didn't know that there was a
it was odd. It definitely has like a country vibe to it, and I you know, I wish I would have asked, but I didn't. So there you go.
Did it sound modern?
It did. I said it was. I wasn't. I wouldn't say it was. Maybe like more like a folkish country kind of sound it had.
Okay.
I mean, that would be my guess off the top of my head. But then I said I was, you know, my daughter was, you know, asking me a bunch of questions, so I kind of got distracted. But what happens when you take a teenager to a record store.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's, I guess, teenager, my daughters might take them to the record store. They're just like, okay, Dad, when are we going to be done? That's the kind of response I get when I take my kids to the record store. Like, this is going to take forever.
When you used to shop for slacks at Sears back in the day with your mom.
Oh, my mom's the worst shopper. She's so slow. She looks at everything and tries everything on. I hated that. Yeah. So now I can kind of relate to how my kids probably feel when I drag them to a record store with me.
she was loving it, but yesterday it did distract me from this new version of this song. So I don't know. There is another one out there, and if maybe people will, when we you post this, maybe somebody will comment and say, "Oh, I know that version," or "I know what it was." Hopefully,
yeah. So, maybe. We'll see. Maybe. All right. Well, so When You Were Mine is, for me, one of the best songs on the album, although I do enjoy the entire album from start to finish. But When You Were Mine was always one of the highlights. And I think it's a combination of the music and the story / lyrics. I like the music because it has like this new wave synthesizer sound to it with the guitar, and it's upbeat. And it just has a different sound than a lot of the disco and dance music that Prince had been making up to this point. And, with Dirty Mind, I feel like a lot of effort was made to change up his sound. Like, he made a conscious effort to do things differently with this album. And clearly, from a lyrical standpoint, he did. I mean, the whole album is just filled with songs that are a little bit subversive and, can spark some controversy. And, he's playing around a little bit with gender dynamics, and obviously a lot of sexual metaphors, and sometimes just straight up sex songs. But this song doesn't really fall under the category of a sex song, because it's more of a relationship song, or I don't know, a love triangle song, if you want to call it that. But it just it's just different enough, and it was just interesting enough when I first heard it a long time ago that I was intrigued and I wanted to learn more about the lyrics. The music drew me in, but the lyrics were intriguing enough that I really wanted to find out what this song was about. And that was, before lyrics were really widely posted everywhere. Dirty Mind wasn't an album that had the lyrics printed on liner notes.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, right. I wonder, and that was probably a very conscious effort by Warner Brothers to not do that. Let people try to come to their own conclusions on what he was saying.
Sure.
Like I said, before the internet, I couldn't just jump on and look up lyrics to When You Were Mine. So it was kind of like it was my own task to figure it out.
Yeah, Dirty Mind is, and that's why it's funny to me that this wasn't a single in any way, because to me off the album, it's definitely the poppiest song. It definitely has a very intriguing sound with the use of the Oberheim synthesizer, if I can say that word correctly. It's kind of a mystery. You obviously can't put Head or Sister out as a single. And this one, to me, if I was an executive, I would, hearing that song, I would have thought, okay, this is our single here. I like to call a lot of Prince's songs. I mean, there aren't too many that are standard, like love songs. I mean, they always seem to have an edge or some sort of bite to them. Mm-hmm. And this is one to me that's definitely in that vein as well. Again, very, almost sad in a way. Here's a desperate individual kind of saying, well, I'll do whatever it takes to be with you again, it always reminded me too. And later, and this is maybe a weird example, but Nine Inch Nails off their first album, Something I Can Never Have, reminds me of this as well. It's just there's something that I had that I wanted, but I let it go, and now I want it back. And it's a very almost juvenile thing, but it is still human nature. Somebody has something that they're enjoying, and you want the same thing, or you want that as well. And this obviously speaks to that. I loved you more when you were mine. So
right. So as we go through the lyrics, we'll there's a lot of points in the lyrics where Prince gives examples of like he looks back, like he's looking back a little bit on what transpired over the relationship. And then the chorus is all about him kind of lamenting the fact that even though all of these things that he's singing about in the verses kind of sound awful, stuff that he's experiencing really doesn't sound all that great, like really abusive, emotionally abusive type relationship. But still in the chorus, he tells us as the listener that he still wishes she was his. And it sounds a little, like you said, sad. It's a bit of a sad song from that standpoint, because there's really no reason why he should have to put up with this type of emotional abuse and repeated cheating. And so
I remember hearing this. Well, we'll get to it, I guess. We can, you know, but the one line that always kind of, you know, gets me is like, you know, when he said, "I let you fool around, but why?" Okay, I don't know. I mean, this is, you know, again, 1980, a good bit before, you know, where the whole concept of, at least as a widespread thing, an open relationship was, you know, something that was really talked about and or considered all that widely.
Well, yeah, I mean, it obviously, and another thing that kind of points to their relationship, if you paint it in terms that are now, that exist now, that maybe didn't in 1980, I don't really know if they did or not, but the whole cuck phenomenon, you know, like that kind of relationship where the guy is just walked all over and she has the power. She's the one in control. And she is the one calling the shots, not just in day to day, but mostly in the bedroom. And, you know, she's like, yeah, I want to sleep with more guys. You know, I want to have sex with whoever. And it's, you don't have any say in that. You would have to just live with it, put up with it, accept it. You can watch if you want, but
yeah. Yeah. The whole cuckold thing, I don't get either, but there's apparently people that enjoy it. Okay. Good for you.
Yeah. Man. Yeah. You know? Right. And I mean, that's like, it's like an alternate lifestyle, but I don't think Prince enjoys it in this song.
No, I would. Yeah. Doesn't seem like it, but
no, it doesn't seem like it at all. Okay, so if we're looking at the lyrics, if we're just looking at verse one to start off, he says the name of the song in the very first line, "When you were mine, I gave you all of my money, time after time, you done me wrong." So right there, he's just already kind of describing the power dynamics where she's taking money from him in spite of the fact that she keeps doing him wrong. He just keeps buying her whatever and just taking care of her financially, for whatever reason. And then he goes, "It was just like a train. You let all my friends come over and meet. And you were so strange, you didn't have the decency to change the sheets." So I'm looking
at that's one that always stuck out in my mind.
Yeah, right.
Especially right? I mean, as a teenager hearing that, it was kind of like, you just, your first response, I mean, at least I think for most people, would be, ew.
Right. Yeah.
What? Yeah, that doesn't sound sanitary in any way.
There's some imagery in that, you know, grouping of lines that isn't, like you said, necessarily it doesn't sound pleasant.
No.
It sounds a little gross. But I think, and this song is, he's really good at doing this where you could take some of these lines literally, or you could look at them as metaphors. So in this section where he's talking about, it was just like a train, you let all my friends come over and meet. Well, he doesn't say have sex. He says come over and meet. So if you're just thinking of the way the words are phrased and written, come over and meet, okay, are they just coming over to say hi and just she's introducing, or she's being introduced to all these different men? But, you know, the word, it was just like a train. I don't think that was an accident. Add that in there, is just like a train. So he doesn't say, "You let all my friends come over and have sex with you." but I'm pretty sure that's what he means, especially when he throws in the line about didn't have the decency to change the sheets. It really kind of hammers that metaphor home, that she's really just sleeping with a number of different guys, and many of them Prince knows in this song, like friends of his or acquaintances.
Yeah, it's hard to take away anything other than, you know, maybe a, you know, some sly, you know, sexual references with the train and whatever, but and not, yeah, saying meet rather than, you know, use another verb or whatever you want in, mm-hmm. in that spot. But it drives it home, obviously, when, you know, he, you know, the final, you know, the final line of that stanza is didn't have the decency to change the sheets. So you have to assume that something other than sleeping was going on. At least I would.
Yeah, I think everybody would.
Right. But again, I remember distinctly on my first listen, you know, hearing that line just going, okay. Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's on an album called Dirty Minds. So,
of course,
it's kind of fitting that this would be the kind of lyrics that would be included in a song off of an album named Dirty Minds. It just fits. He continues on in that verse with, "Oh, girl, when you were mine, I used to let you wear all my clothes. You were so fine. Maybe that's the reason that it hurt me so." And the whole, you know, "I used to let you wear all my clothes," that just kind of goes back to Prince playing around with gender, gender roles, and you know, using that. And it'll be discussed a little more in Uptown on that song later on in the album. But
sure.
At this point in his career, you know, he was wearing bikini briefs on stage. He had, you know, the long permed hair. Well, he did in the previous album. He would wear thigh high boots with his bikini briefs. So his aesthetic was very androgynous and playing around with, like I said, with gender and wearing lace and just things that were considered more frilly and girly. And so the fact that he said, "I used to let you wear all my clothes," isn't that surprising, knowing what his style was at the time and what kind of image he was putting out there.
Sure. I mean,
an interest in his clothes.
The one that always sticks out in my mind about more the gender switching or the gender roles were, is, you know, "If I Was Your Girlfriend" is the one that always sticks out in my mind. But, you know, that's pretty blatant. But wearing, I that's the funny thing about this song, I guess, in a way, is that I myself, you know, never, I mean, it's I guess, something that doesn't really click. I mean, but for Prince, obviously, it does. I never had any, you know, burning desire to wear, you know, women's clothes. And I guess, you know, again, to each their own.
But you didn't grow up in Uptown, man, in the late 70s, early 80s.
I didn't, of course. And maybe if I grew up more in the, you know, the that era, you know, then it would be dangerous, I guess, especially as a teenager and kids, a teenager and or kid, dangerous Prince albums. It just seemed almost pornographic, I guess, in a certain way. I mean, it's obviously called Dirty Mind. Here's this guy on the cover, kind of dressed, you know, differently, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. But then once you, you know, get into it and explore it, it really, you know, doesn't matter anymore. It's just, you know, do you like the sound? Do you like the music? And, you know, what's going on and all that kind of stuff. But clearly, yes. I mean, there's obviously some, you know, gender, you know, flipping or gender experimentation here going on with him and her switching and swapping clothing.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, you said pornographic, and that's really not an inaccurate way to describe it for somebody who was not familiar with that scene, you know, in the cities like in New York or in Minneapolis or whatever, where at the time, I mean, in the early 80s, you saw that a lot with our rock stars. Or even in the 80s in general, where rock stars would dress up like women a lot of times. They'd have the heavy makeup, the big hair, sometimes wearing women's clothes. And yeah, obviously Boy George is one clear example of that that was most famous. But it was with all the all types of men back then doing that. And that was just what rock stars did, thanks to people like David Bowie and in the 70s doing similar things and just really experimenting with their visuals, what they were presenting out there. So for Prince to do that, it's really, It's not surprising, but still, it never fails to shock if that's not what you're introduced to, or if you don't see that when you walk out your door and walk in around in your neighborhood, you don't see any men dressing up like women and women dressing up like men. It feels a little, and when you said pornographic, I felt like the same way when I first saw the album, because of the album cover, because of the names of the songs on the back.
Exactly, yeah.
Head. You know, I was just vaguely even aware of what that meant, but it just seemed like it was very sexual and very dirty, and I almost felt like I shouldn't be looking at this album. Like I should put it back. It's not
right. It's not for me specifically.
It's not for me, and I might get in trouble if I'm
right. Don't want mom
boring too much.
Yeah, see me looking at this. But no doubt, and you know that's again. I think that was why fortunately or unfortunately, everyone said, I believe you come to things when you're ultimately ready for them. And it wasn't until, my late teens where I finally, I guess felt comfortable listening to this album. And it was a lot of reading a lot of the rock, journalism of the day and Rolling Stone and that kind of stuff, who always, all the writers, and those, were talking about how great this album is and how overtly sexual and blah, blah, blah. And so, it was always intriguing, but still a little bit, scary until you're actually kind of, ready for it.
So then the chorus, as we kind of already alluded to, but the chorus is pretty straightforward. He goes, "I know that you're going with another guy. I don't care." And then there's like this echo afterward. "Don't care.
Don't care.
I love you, baby. That's no lie. I love you more than I did when you were mine." And that goes back to the whole missing what he doesn't have anymore, lamenting that it's gone, that he had it and he let it out of his grasp somehow, even though it was maybe not the healthiest. So he's going with another guy. So apparently one of the guys that was introduced to her.
Yeah. In the train session. Yeah. Again, it's a very human thing. It's you're jealous of or you're longing or lamenting for a, something that's lost to you, something that, now is out of reach for you, or was yours and is somebody else's. And it's just, human nature, most people have that kind of longing or, kind of thoughts. And, it taps into that, a very primal kind of human emotion, a little bit of jealousy he has that. Well, I want that. And how can I go about taking that from him? It's obviously something that, we all, struggle with, or, and kind of learn as you get older to kind of curtail that a little bit, but still it's always, you have those kind of thoughts or jealous, pangs, at least again, I do. So I'm sure I'm not alone in that. So
no, of course not. And, it's just interesting that he claims that he loves her more now that she's not with him. So maybe he's just also apologetic a little bit. "I love you more than I did when you were mine. Maybe I didn't," although I don't understand what he could have done to lay down for this woman.
Yeah, he was giving her money and letting her have her clothes. So, and that's not, it's, I think to me, maybe more that's, the emotion just feels a little bit more raw, I think, now that you're experiencing that respect. Maybe it's not that he loves her more. It's just it feels that way. It's because the jealousy or, whatever is kind of heightening that a little bit.
And certainly.
It definitely feels that way, but maybe not so much. It's just the best way to express it is it feels like I love you more now that I can't have you. And I think that's, at least in my mind, again, that's what I would think it's relating to.
Yeah, I agree with that as well. I don't think he really does truly love her more. I think he just feels like he does because she's not with him. Starts off verse 2 with repeating the name of the song, "When You Were Mine," just kind of like reminding the listener, okay, now we're talking about back when they were together, when I was with this woman. So this next verse is going back in time, when you were mine, you were kind of sort of my best friend. So I was blind, I let you fool around. And we come back to that part where he talks about her fooling around on him again. And, you know, he already expressed that sentiment in the first verse, but he's repeating it, basically just saying she's not monogamous.
Faithful, faithful, monogamous, yeah.
Yeah, she's obviously not monogamous with him. I let you fool around. I never cared. I never was the kind to make a fuss. When he was there, sleeping in between the two of us. So I think this is, that last line, it's always been one of the key lines in the song, I think, because people just gravitate towards that line and they want to interpret it, I think, one of two ways. And maybe there's more ways to interpret it, but I've always interpreted it one of two ways. Once again, the literal sleeping in between the two of us. I mean, was there some sort of threesome dynamic going on? Is Prince, is his character admitting bisexuality because he's literally sleeping with her and this new boyfriend that she has? Or is it more of like symbolism or like a metaphor for sleeping in between the two of us, meaning like he's come between them, and now that she's sleeping with this other guy, it's come between, it's broken apart the dynamic between Prince and this girl, where she's not interested in him anymore because now she's sleeping with this other guy. So he's come between the two of them in their relationship.
I always took it as a metaphor, you know, yeah, rather than literal. Now there's a divide between them, and rather than a literal kind of menage a trois, or, you know, whatever you want to call it. I always thought that was kind of way. If somebody's your best friend, you know, they're your best friend, not kind of sorta.
I know. I like that.
Yeah. I mean, so is it, I think it's more of just a phrasing thing. It just sounded good rather than, okay, you know, if you know somebody's your best friend, you don't have any, there's nothing to debate. It's, you know, it's not wishy-washy. It's okay. This person is this in your life. So, but it could be, it sounds, you know, I always took that too, is that he's just kind of hedging a little bit, like saying, oh, well, or just saying that in a way. It's like, well, you were kind of sort of my best friend. And he doesn't want to completely admit to that because it's, you know, the weirdness of the whole situation overall, kind of hedging, you know, those two lines, you know, that line and the, you know, sleeping in between the two of us are the two biggest, you know, takeaways or the biggest ones that stick out to me there. And again, a lot of this song has that kind of almost, you know, the bluesy plaintiveness, you know, a lot of the older type songs where it's, you're just not every, you know, every woman, or, you know, seems to be the, you know, the mean mistreater kind of thing. And, you wonder, you know, again, who is he writing about? You know, is there a specific person? And again, it, you know, was never mentioned that I could find that this was written about a specific person. It seems to just have been a kind of almost off the cuff kind of thing that he did. And, you know, you wonder who are these people that are this terrible, or where is he finding? Maybe he needs to find some new women or get some, you know, go into a different area and, you know, look at some other possible mates.
Yeah, it kind of makes you feel or wonder if, like, Prince was in a not so great frame of mind when he wrote this song. And sure, maybe this didn't actually happen to him, but just to come up with a song that is, or the lyrics of a song that's so poppy and so bouncy, musically speaking, but then to throw lyrics onto it that really are, like we said, very, very sad and just a little depressing and painful. And so it's just, you wonder where he was in his frame of mind when he wrote this. Don't know, but it's makes you wonder. And I think, like, with,
well, yeah, apparently he was on tour with Rick James, so maybe he was talking about that kind of stuff with that crazy bastard.
Yeah, that's right. He was
maybe he was just observing some Rick James madness and he was like, I can riff on that a little bit, who knows. But, you know, that it's just kind of, I always wonder where an artist is or what frame of mind they're in when, you know, they put something like this, they commit something like this to paper or tape or however you want to, you know, whatever their medium is. So,
yeah, I just get the feeling from the song that he in the protagonist is let things go a little too far. Like he let himself be used and walked on or walked over to the point where it actually ruined the relationship. Like he was too willing to bend over backwards for her that it ended up instead of actually just pleasing her and going above and beyond to try to please her and make her happy, it ended up ending their relationship because then she found somebody else. And so even if it was just initially about the sex and she was only into just, you know, having multiple partners for sexual satisfaction, I think what ultimately came of it is that she found somebody through this process that she was felt was a better mate, better suitor than Prince was in the song. So it's almost like he made the mistake of letting it go too far. And so like in the first verse, he talks about multiple men. All my friends came over to meet, but yeah. Then all of a sudden now there's just one. There's just like one key guy that seems to have gotten in between them that she is spending her time with. So like he didn't really care before. It was just always seemed like it was just a casual thing and it wasn't a big deal. She would always come back to me at the end of the day. But now that's not the case. Now he's sleeping there. And so he's literally and figuratively sleeping in between the two of them right. In some cases. So it's it's just kind of another take on it, I guess.
Right. And I think the thing too, you wonder about like, it's like a self-respect thing. It's like, doesn't this guy just have any, why don't you just leave? I mean, don't you have any self-respect? Just be like, okay, this is the way it's going to be, or this is the way you're treating me. Then, you know, I'm out. I don't need this. I can do other things. And it wasn't until, I guess, later as an adult where you kind of understand maybe that those feelings a little more. It's when things get kind of heavier and more, I guess, have more meaning or feeling to them. You can understand, at least from my, again, perspective, I can understand this perspective a little bit more than I could when I was younger, a little more black and white about things.
So then after the second verse, he goes into the chorus again, which is sung in the same way. I know that you're going with another guy. Don't care because I love you, baby. That's no lie. I love you more than I did when you were mine. There's a musical break at this point, and then he sings a few lines in the bridge. When you were mine, you were all I ever wanted to do. Now I spend my time following him whenever he's with you. And with this line again, I think there's more than one way that you can interpret it. So is he that last line, following him whenever he's with you, is he stalking them? Like, is he literally following them around because he's so kind of obsessed with the end of this relationship and who she's chosen now as a mate? And the way he says it, following him whenever he's with you instead of following her. So it's almost like he's obsessed with this new guy that she's with. Like, why? What is it about him that makes him more appealing? And how? Why did you end up choosing him over me at the end of the day? So, but is he literally following him, or is it just kind of like keeping tabs, you know, or just, I don't know. I mean, do you have a different kind of take on this?
No, I mean, I always took it as the stalker. You know, yeah. Kind of thing. Yeah. It's, you know, he's so bent out of shape and so wrecked by this whole thing that he can't, you know, move past it in a sense. So he's, you know, he's got nothing to do now. It seems that so the obsession has kind of taken over and he's, you know, following them, you know, or like you said, I never really looked at it that way. I always took it as him following a couple rather than, but it would be interesting if he was just following him, maybe to try and glean something or, you know, take away something that you know, well, what, why does she love him and not me? And, you know, that would be obviously, I think, a bit of a weirder scenario if he was just following, you know, the guy around rather than them as a unit or as a couple.
Yeah, but I think he's still following them as a couple because he says following him whenever he's with you. Right. So it doesn't imply that he's like really that interested in him when he's not with her. But it's just, I just found it interesting that he focuses on him when they're together. Like
he doesn't say I follow you guys around, or he doesn't use the term as a couple, or he's saying, you know, but he mentions, you know, him specifically. So
yeah. So it does make you think a little bit. I mean, whether or not he wrote it that way to spark a little extra thought behind it, I don't know, but it certainly does. It makes you wonder, like, why is that focus and energy on him when they're together instead of her, when she's the one that he claims to love more now than when they're together.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, it's like he's lonely. He's has nothing better to do with his time because he's a little obsessed by the end of their relationship. You were all I ever wanted to do, and now I spend my time. So it's very kind of like we've said multiple times. It's sad. It's just you don't feel good for this person in the song. It's very unhealthy. He's got a very unhealthy outlook.
Yeah. Yeah, he maybe needs to get a hobby.
Yeah, and from 1980 to 2019, this phrase, this line can take on a different meaning. Following him whenever he's with you meant something different in 1980 than it does now, because now you can follow somebody, you know, you can cyber stalk somebody, and you don't even have to leave your house really to stalk another person. So nowadays, following him whenever he's with you could just literally mean cyber stalk the guy.
Yeah, which obviously,
you know, find out like where he's going and what he's doing, and
it's a much easier thing. You don't even have to leave your house, or you don't have to leave, you know, your office or whatever. You can do that. But yeah, I mean, it took in 1980 to actually, you know, to physically, you know, stalk people, it took a good deal of effort. You had to kind of really put the time in, and now you can just, you know, with a couple clicks of your phone or your mouse, you can, you know, find out a plethora of information that you know, that would be at your fingertips rather than, you know, it would have been, you know, 40 odd years ago. So
yeah, but just thinking of it from a modern audience listening to the song now, they could hear that line and interpret it completely different if they're just putting it in their 2019 lens and just thinking of it from that way and not thinking of it how it was written and the time it was written. But it works. I mean, really, it works either way.
Yeah. I mean, when you on Twitter or Instagram or wherever, I mean, you have followers, you're, you know, people who are following you, or, you know, YouTube subscribers, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it definitely works in that frame as well.
Yeah. That term is taken on a different meaning in the social media age.
No doubt.
So then he goes back into the chorus. I know that you're going with another guy. I don't care because I love you, baby. That's no lie. I love you more than I did when you were mine. And then the outro to the song moves on from there. And he just sings, when you were mine, you know, love you, baby, when you were mine. And that brings us to the end of the song. And I think at this point, you're just kind of left a little bit taken aback. You know, it's real final line of the song is that following him whenever he's with you, because the rest of it's just chorus that you've already heard. And it's a bit devastating from a listener standpoint. Like, you're listening to this song and you're just thinking to yourself, this is a guy who's really damaged. And although the song, as I mentioned, is very upbeat, it has, you know, these bright synth lines, and, you know, it doesn't sound like a song that, like, if you swap lyrics with, you know, something else, that it would work. And this could be like a number one pop hit. I think the reason why, I'll never really know unless somebody comes forward, that it wasn't chosen as a single in spite of its the music that could have crossed over and had that appeal, is just the song itself, the lyrics and the story being told is just a little too dark, maybe, for pop radio.
It is baffling as I was saying earlier, it is baffling that this was not a single off this album. Just again, like you said, for the musical hooks. The lyrics, yeah, I mean, a lot of times that can be, I think, you know, I mean, look at a lot of, you know, songs that were popular and got a lot of radio play. There's some...
Every Breath You Take by the Police.
Of course, exactly. That, you know, is clearly a, a stalker's anthem. And, you know, this doesn't quite, you know, go to that level. I mean, it mentions at the end, you know, and again, like you said, that's what you're left with. That's the takeaway from the song. He's going to be, you know, there's no resolution. He's going to be, I guess, following them and until either she comes back or he moves on. That's the takeaway I get from it. But it's funny, you know, even as an adult, I mean, I'll listen to songs that I you know, were popular to me as a kid or, and you just listening to it through an adult lens or adult perspective, you know, you take away something completely different. I think if this was played in, you know, pop radio in the 80s, I think it would have been, you know, fine. I just don't, at least in my mind, I don't see that. The lyrics maybe being the threshold or the thing that kept it from being a single, but you know, I'm not a Warner Brothers executive, so
right. Maybe a short-sighted executive might have looked at it that way, but honestly, you're right. There was a lot of songs out there, and there still is, with lyrical content that could be considered dark or maybe disturbing to an extent, but still very successful pop songs.
Yeah, I mean, and the one I just thought of too is like Radiohead's "Creep," obviously.
well, in the '90s, it was popular.
That was more acceptable. Yeah, I mean, it was right. That was you know, the way it wanted to go. But that's just
flagellation was like a movement. So I'm a loser, baby.
Exactly. And Billy Corgan had the shirt that said zero, and
yeah.
That nonsense. Yeah,
that was what was popular. But yeah, in the 1980s, it was starting to get that way. I mean, and this came out in 80, but honestly, it was to the cusp of the 80s. So it was, we're talking the 1970s, probably written, or at least very, very early 80s. And the sound, I just think the sound was fairly progressive for a black artist. There wasn't a lot of, to my knowledge, black artists making music like When You Were Mine. It was still very much like black artists were put in like this category, like you had to make soul music or R&B music.
Yeah, soul, funk,
disco, or funk. And to do something where he's borrowing from other genres that were starting to become popular or had been popular, like new wave, or, you know, doing things like bands like the Cars were doing, or because I get a Cars vibe when I hear this song, and that's maybe just me because I'm a fan of the Cars, but I always had a Cars vibe from this song, just the way the synth and the guitar, and they did a lot of that in their career, so that's what I get from it. And I know that maybe other people hear other things in this song, but that's always what I kind of got out of it, was it was Cars influenced, and I have no idea if it actually was or not, to be honest with you. I don't even know if Prince was aware of the Cars.
Yeah, I mean, I dig the Cars as well. You know, about a month ago, I bought a very nice vinyl collection of the Cars' greatest hits. Now, maybe and this to me, I guess, is the true, at least on this album, the true genesis of that Prince Minneapolis sound, the blending of the guitar and the keyboards, and, you know, maybe the synth type, you know, the synth type drums, or not quite the regular, you know, drums. Mm-hmm. That were, you know, just becoming popular then. And I'm sure I'm not the first person that said that, but that was, you know, you had mentioned it in the opening that it was definitely a different vibe and sound from the first, you know, two Prince records for you and Prince. And this is really where I think he turned a corner and came into his own and was just like, I'm going to do what I'm going to do. And here it comes. And this is what I'm doing now. And it kind of, you know, set him on the way to what we, you know, it was the first step in a much larger world into what controversy and then 1999 became. You know, just singing about what he wanted to sing about, not, you know, just laying it out there and, you know, unfiltered in a sense. the use of, again, the heavy, keyboard and synth type sounds, melding that with, again, like a guitar, pop rock kind of sensibility, like the Cars, was definitely what was, I take that away from it as well.
Yeah, for sure. And the Minneapolis Sounds genesis, I think a lot of people would cite and agree with you that it kind of started here with Dirty Mind. And it evolved from there, obviously, with Controversy and music that the time was putting out with Prince's involvement shortly after. But yeah, this is really kind of it. And When You Were Mine is that song that a lot of people point to where the melding of the genres came together in really what I consider one of the more perfect pop songs that he did at this time, even if it never was a hit. But that's neither here nor there, and it's not really important in terms of it's how it's looked at from those of us looking back 40 years into the past. This song has a much more importance as a Prince song than a pop song or a hit, a crossover hit. So
no doubt.
Do you have any other final thoughts on When You Were Mine? I know you just kind of did that. So anything else you want to?
I guess, the final thought that I have, and again, we touched on it maybe in the beginning, we're talking about, the first time hearing this song is, and it was only a scant 3 years later, say, when Cyndi Lauper recorded it and put it out there. What do you think the difference was? What in 3 years happened when you have a woman singing from a male perspective still? She didn't change, guy to girl or anything like that.
Pronouns the same. You're right.
Right, exactly. And it wasn't a huge hit, but it was still like a hit for her. It was a single off that album, off of She's So Unusual. So what do you think the difference was, or what changed in 3 years that made this song, single worthy between 1980 and 1983? That's something that I'm kind of still wrestling with a little bit. So I wonder what the change was, or what the gear shift was, why it was not a hit for Prince and a hit for Cyndi Lauper.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just the changing of the musical landscape at that time. I don't know if MTV had anything to do with it, where you could see people singing the songs that you could only hear before, and you saw the visuals that went along with it. You saw what the singers looked like, and a lot of the new wave artists at the time, and Cyndi was kind of bouncing between dance and new wave and rock. And I think it was just people were more open and accepting of songs with different takes, different perspectives. And MTV, like I said, I think opened a lot of doors that way at the time. It introduced those of us in middle America or just in small towns or wherever to these artists' aesthetics. And at the time when Prince was putting forth his look for Dirty Mind, unless you were going to his shows or you were paying close attention to what was being written about him, it wouldn't have registered it in a way that if MTV had been around at the time and he would have put out his music videos and you could have seen it. I don't know if that explains why it could have been a hit, but I think weird was cool. If there was a period where being different and being out there and outrageous looking was much more acceptable than it was in the 70s. And since this is so early 80s, pre-MTV, I just feel like it was more openness to being different and a little off-center, off-kilter.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, the title of the album says it itself. She's So Unusual. And yeah, that's a really good point. The genesis or the explosion of MTV between 1980 and 1983, and I think was probably a good reason as to why this became something for her and not for him, not for Prince.
Yeah. Or just because it's safer because it was a woman singing it, and we've always, as a society, at least in the United States, I can speak to that. Gender bending is considered more acceptable for women than men. We have this thing where we do not like our men to look like women at all as a society. But women, you can do whatever.
It's
not really true. It's not, honestly, you can't say that. But I think there was more acceptance to that, maybe with a woman singing a song about potentially threesomes and gender bending, and it was just maybe not quite as dangerous.
Yeah, no doubt. I hear you on that.
All right. Well, thanks, Jerry. Once again, I wanted to thank Jerry Bonner for joining me to talk about When You Were Mine. Last time we spoke, we were also talking about a song that where Prince was being mistreated so, with Why You Want to Treat Me So Bad. So maybe we'll have to get together on a song where he's actually succeeding in love. We'll see.
Does he have those songs?
It takes a while. It takes a while. Yeah. So thanks again, Jerry, for joining me this morning. And it's nice talking to you.
Yep. Thank you, Jason. Have a good day. And thank you for having me once again. Always a pleasure.
Thanks again to Jerry. And thank you for listening to the Press Rewind Prince Lyrics podcast. I've been your host, Jason Redinger. And get a hold of me on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, Press Rewind. And my Twitter handle is at BREINIJ if you'd like to say hello. I'd love to hear from you. Rate me on iTunes if you feel compelled to. If that's how you listen to my podcast. Thanks again, and until next time, goodbye.